This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by IT Pro TV, an easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. Visit itpro.tv/what-the-tech and use the code WTT30 for a free 7-day trial and 30% off the lifetime of your account. And by FreshBooks. For a 30-day free trial, go to freshbooks.com/WTT and enter in What the Tech in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Hey everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by comedy legend, Paul Theroux.
Wow.
You are a comedy legend.
Yeah, I'm something.
The funniest guy in tech.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Of course,
now, you know, my life has been an utter disaster the last God knows how long, about 2 weeks now. And I have to tell you, the epitome of what my life is as a whole right now is the following. I am starting the show. My kid is screaming because she's past her bedtime. My dog is barking. The door is slamming. It's 150 degrees in here, and my wife is on bed rest. So this is what has happened with my life. And actually, in all seriousness, last week I said that a lot of stuff is happening. A lot of people reached out. They want to know what it is, so I'm gonna kind of talk about this. A couple weeks ago, I told Paul this. Actually, a week ago, a little over a week ago, just started having some contractions. Well, for people who don't know, my wife is pregnant. She's 34 weeks pregnant now. And she was not feeling well, so she went to the hospital. She actually thought it was nothing. And her doctor said, go to the hospital, just get checked out. They're about to let her go, and they realized that she's going into preterm labor. So not terrible, 33 weeks, 34 weeks for that to happen, but they would like to hold off. So they gave her some medication. They gave her magnesium, which I guess holds off on the contractions. And, you know, she kind of felt better. And they sent her home a couple days later. She couldn't come home because we're doing construction on the entire house, which is a whole separate issue. And so she stayed at her aunt's, and yesterday she came back for the first time. And it was, it's rough because she can't really do much. And the second she starts doing anything, she starts feeling a lot of pain and pressure. So I've kind of had to pick up some slack there, and a lot of relatives have kind of come in and picked up slack. On top of that, my roof is almost collapsing. So we have to put a new roof on the house, and they have to do all of that. That's a whole separate issue. I've started a semi full-time job in the city. I'm doing digital marketing and media for a friend's company. So that has become a whole thing. And I'm doing my best, Paul, to kind of keep it together. It is not easy.
You know, you seem a little lazy to me.
Yeah. My life has become a tornado at this point, but that is kind of what's going on. So actually, I may end up doing the show from another location in the next 2 weeks because of the construction that's going to be happening here. It's going to be almost impossible for me to do it from the studio. So next couple of weeks, it's possible. I'm trying to not to do that, but it's a, everything at once, right? That's what happens. Everything at once. But we do have so much technology stuff to talk about. We did the show. I was remote last week, and I would have liked to talk about it in the studio because I could concentrate a little bit better. But this week, there is a ton of news, and Project Scorpio is that big story. When did this video come out? Before we go in, because we got to take a minute and talk about our sponsor, but when did that video come out that they released?
No, I think it was 9 o'clock this morning, wasn't it?
Okay, 9 o'clock this morning. So this is nearly breaking news. It's breaking news if you had print and we weren't a digital product.
It's breaking news compared to the New York Times.
If we were the New York Times, this would be breaking news right now and you'd be holding it in your afternoon edition. But before we continue, let's take a moment and talk about our great sponsor, and it's itpro.tv. So many of you guys have mentioned and you've signed up about this. This is great. This is a great service. Imagine high quality video production, right? Entertaining content about tech, but you learn something. They have unbelievable courses top to bottom. And I'm going to pull up the website here. I can't pull up the video because I'm having some DNS issues on this machine, but they have a great package here. You can learn a bunch of stuff. They have videos here, and I'll play the video. You could essentially take a multitude of courses anywhere at any time, whether it's cybersecurity or the latest information on Photoshop. You can learn how to do Photoshop, the whole entire Adobe suite. Their clients include Harvard, MIT, Stanford, and much more. They do step-by-step instructions, and it's essentially a web course. If you whether you want to get recertified or you want to take a certification and expand and then move up in your company, these are some of the great stuff that they do. They do Cisco, Microsoft Office. They have all these courses, VMware, technical skills, project management. I mean, it's unbelievable the amount of stuff that they have. And here's a cool thing. They have different types of packages, right? They have a package that you could pay for. They have multiple versions of this. Free package, by the way, which all of you guys should check out whether you want to pay or not. Free basic membership gives you access to their live feeds. They do live content as well. Very similar, you know, think about Twit, right? Think about GFQ and how we present content. These guys are stepping it up. I've never seen anybody give you courses that look like this. With a free membership, you get access to their live feed and several free courses. With the live feed, you could actually view the courses as they're being recorded. And there's over 30 hours of new content every single week. So there's something new that you can learn every week. Standard membership gives you access to the entire course library. So if you want to do anything with, let's say, cybersecurity or ethical hacking, cybersecurity fundamentals, or you decide, hey, I want to learn how to do the Adobe suite. I want to learn how to do Photoshop. You could go and do it. You have access to all of this stuff. You get access to that, including the live content, on-demand content, anywhere you want, and also DRM-free for offline viewing. They also have a premium membership package, which includes the benefits of the basic and the standard, and you get access to over 100 step-by-step virtual labs, which is unbelievable. Guys, go check it out. Get your free 7-day trial and 30% off the lifetime of your account by going to itpro.tv/what-the-tech. Or you could use the code WTT30 at checkout. We have a link in our website. You could use the promo code WTT30 at checkout. But sign up for the free also and get a tour. This is awesome. These guys are unbelievable. I've been saying this for a couple of weeks that we're going to do a demo. I would love to do the demo right now, but for whatever reason, this machine is not working properly. I don't know why. But look at this. Hold on. Let me actually pull this up so you could actually see what this looks like when you take a course. Isn't that something? Paul, have you ever taken a course that looks like this? Never.
That's pretty good.
Looks great. Yeah. Unbelievable. Thank you, IT Pro, for supporting the show. So let's take a moment, Paul, and talk about what came out about Project Scorpio. A lot of people have been asking, when was this information? I mean, did you expect this to happen today?
Yeah, I mean, actually, this was kind of telegraphed. So, we knew this was coming. We didn't know exactly what it would be, right? And of course, there's a kind of a long list of stuff we still don't know about Project Scorpio. But I think the big takeaway here is that the organization behind the articles that occurred today and the videos is, I guess it's a site or a service or whatever that does a lot of serious, you know, technical benchmarking, and you know, they compare these things at a very deep level. And frankly, lately they've been very pro on the PlayStation platform. You know, in their view, the PlayStation 4 is technically outpacing the Xbox One today. So their view of Project Scorpio is actually very interesting. And of course, just the fact that they're the only people outside of Microsoft who have even seen this thing is by nature very interesting. And the key takeaway here is that this thing is the real generational leap forward, that this reestablishes, or maybe establishes, Xbox as the more powerful, the most powerful video game console available. In other words, they're going to leapfrog over the PlayStation 4 Pro.
So this is, I mean, I'm going to pull up Thorat.com, which you have a very good breakdown of this, actually. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I want to see the comparison here.
No, that's not it.
Yeah. Okay. First of all, let's talk about this before I find that article. What will this have?
What will this have?
Yeah. This version of the Xbox. What will it be for people that don't know? I mean, we've spoken about it 50,000 times, but
So they have positioned Scorpio as a second or third generation version of the Xbox One, right? So it's not a completely new architecture. It will run all Xbox game, all Xbox One games, including all Xbox 360 games that work on the Xbox One in backwards compatibility mode. I guess we've known that for some time. Microsoft has promised that this thing will do true 4K, which is a little bit of a dig at the PlayStation 4 Pro because that does not do true 4K gaming. Yeah. In fact, there are almost zero, you know, examples of it playing any games at 4K resolutions. They've talked about the VR capabilities very vaguely. I don't believe there was any discussion of VR in this week's revelations, but you know, that's a thing. And they've described it as a premium console. So we've always kind of known that it will cost more than an Xbox One S, which will remain in the market, right? And that they will sell these things kind of side by side. And so if you're familiar with how the PlayStation works, they have a PlayStation 4, like the slim version, but like a normal PlayStation 4, whatever the, you know, whatever that model is. And then they have a PlayStation 4 Pro. Those two things are compatible with each other in the sense that the same hardware and software works across both. Some games are specifically tailored to look better on the PS4 Pro. It does some upscaling, and some games run a little bit better on the PS4 Pro. But it's basically, you know, two different models of the same product line. And so Xbox One S and Scorpio will move forward in this in the same way.
Yeah, so I'm looking here on the website. You have a nice comparison between the Xbox One, PS4 Pro, and Project Scorpio. And, you know, it is tech-wise... It's, right. You know,
numbers, you know, looks bigger, bigger.
Yeah. Numbers look bigger. I don't know if that means anything in the long run, but the numbers do look bigger.
Well, so the way to think of it is actually right below that chart, because there's a plain English explanation of that stuff. So, the CPU is 30% faster than the current Xbox One. The GPU is 4.6 times more powerful. The memory is faster. There's a lot more RAM to play with, which is hugely meaningful, on a system that's going to be delivering 4K Ultra HD resolution games, right? And most importantly, is it really more powerful than the PlayStation 4 Pro? And yes, absolutely, without a doubt, and not by a small amount. It is dramatically better than the PlayStation 4 Pro.
So pricing, Paul, anything? What do we know?
No. The author, the person who got to see the hardware in action says he thinks it's going to cost about $500. Mm-hmm. I think closer to $700 might be more realistic, you know, especially in the beginning, because it's... a very high-end hardware. And so if you kind of compare this to the PC world, today we have these NVIDIA 1080 i-series graphics that are very high-end, pretty expensive as well, by the way. And the PCs that you would typically put in such a, you know, put this card in are fairly high-end computers, right? So we're talking about somewhere between $1,000 and $2,000 for the PC. The graphics that are in the Scorpio, according to these people, basically are along the lines of a GTX 1070, right? Which I guess is about a year old in the PC space for super high-end PC graphics.
Okay.
But when you compare it to consoles, right? I mean, like the way they describe it is that the PS4 Pro has roughly the graphics of a Radeon RX 470.
Okay. 480? No.
Or 70 480. They said 470, but okay. Or an underclocked 480. Okay. But these are GTX 1070 is a much higher end spec. Now, obviously, today I think the 1070 is what I put in my son's PC when I built it last year, and so I don't remember actually.
I think I got the one that I built out for you. Mm-hmm. At 980. You did a 980. It wasn't out 980? Yet. Yeah, the 1070 wasn't out. The 1060 and 1070 weren't out. That's when, remember, everybody said there were idiots. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I thought it was the 1080 we were waiting on or whatever. Okay, well, I don't remember, but it doesn't really matter. This is not, you know, it's not the top of the class, you know, for PCs. Yeah. I get that. But you understand, if this is $500 to $700, this is still far less expensive than any PC running this type of hardware. And it's a console, so it's way easier, right? And so I still think it is a nice generational leap forward for consoles and for the kind of plug-and-play thing. The other thing that's really cool about this, by the way, is that it makes normal Xbox One games run better. So one of the big digs against the Xbox One is that even though it's a 1080p console, like a full HD console, very rarely do any games ever run at those resolutions. And they're saying that all titles that run at 1080p should run at native 4K on Scorpio, even the 900p third-party game should hit native 4K resolutions on Xbox One Scorpio. And so this is going to this is going to make current games look better and run better as well. And I think that's a big deal. I think the real point of this thing is to kind of I keep wanting to say reestablish, but I guess it's really establish Xbox as the most technically advanced console, right? And I think the thing that's maybe that isn't getting enough attention, and I certainly didn't write it either, to be fair, is that because Microsoft has branched out the Xbox platform to include PCs, the fact that this thing can play 4K games and can natively display all of those games at 1080p for people who don't have 4K monitors.
Mm-hmm.
And those games can run on Windows 10 PCs, not all of them, right? The developer has to choose to do that. They've created this kind of ecosystem for gamers and for game developers that is much, much bigger than the tens of millions of people that currently have Xbox Ones. And they allow it to include the hundreds of millions of people who have Windows 10 PCs, right? And so I think making this thing more like a high-end Windows 10 gaming PC was sure. In some ways part of the point. And I think even though they didn't talk about it this week, that VR stuff is going to be tied to the Windows mixed reality hardware that's coming out this year from a variety of hardware makers, and that stuff will all work on this console as well. And I think that is kind of the point of this.
Yeah, so, I mean, the whole selling point here would be for Microsoft, this isn't just a beefed up Xbox, right? Like, there has to be something that goes along with it, and VR will be the answer to that, in my opinion. Do you think that's fair to say
I
that?
I don't really have a lot of experience with this. I mean, I have a couple low-end VR things, and I've played with, things like Oculus Rift and HTC Vive, but only in very limited ways, right? But my understanding of VR is that if you have a particular machine, and it doesn't matter if it's a PC with a big screen or a phone with a tiny screen, that thing may output it, full HD or 4K or quad HD, somewhere in between. But when you get to VR, everything gets downscaled really dramatically. And that's one of the problems, especially on phones. Yeah. So those things look like, YouTube videos from 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You need this kind of horsepower to drive a better VR experience as well. And so.
So do we know anything about the VR experience and what that's going to be like? I mean, can we guess?
What we can guess is that it's going to be based on the Windows Mixed Reality platform, that any of those headsets will work on the Xbox One Scorpio, and that based on where this thing specs out compared to like a gaming PC, it's going to be offer one of the higher end experiences for VR. So it should actually be a very high quality VR/ mixed reality experience.
Yeah, this is a very interesting year for this because the holiday season will be the VR season, right? Between PlayStation and Xbox,
right?
Right. So, I'm curious if this is the battle. This is the future of gaming in the house. The console has to constantly evolve, and it has, right? Yeah. From the original Xbox to now, it's become more of an entertainment piece. It does everything. It's this workhorse in your living room. That was the goal, that this thing sits and does everything. Now, we're in the next stages of gaming. And, I mean, it all comes down to execution and the titles. Will the titles support this? Yeah. Will they join in? And how, how cheesy will it look initially?
Yeah, I mean, because I'm an Xbox fan, and because I write about this stuff for a living as well, but really because I'm an Xbox fan, I mean, I'm kind of looking at it from the good news from Microsoft kind of perspective, because there was a lot of good news here. But, the market reality is that the PlayStation is outselling the Xbox One today by 2-1 or more. And it's very possible that none of this stuff will matter. In other words, a year from now, 2 years from now, that Microsoft will be able to claim that it has the most technically advanced system, maybe, but the PlayStation will still be outselling it. And so, from the perspective of developers, you still want to you're going to target that platform because that's where all the users are. So it's not enough to show up with high end hardware, right? I mean, this doesn't guarantee any kind of success. I want to be really clear about that. But it's exciting, that they're, taking these steps, right? Just improving the platform in this way. I think this is a big advance.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm curious to see it. This is a very different package. It's not entry level gaming at the house. You know, this is $700, $600. That's a lot of money. And that was Microsoft's problem originally with the Xbox.
I mean, you know, we don't know a lot of stuff about this, but, you know, even last year, people have made, you know, had made the argument like it's a little early 4K. A lot of people are just now getting, you know, big 1080p type TV sets and everything. But I actually think this 4K thing is rolling. And so VR remains a little bit of a question mark, but this kind of hardware is a nice match for the TVs that I think are going out the door today. You know, we bought those big 4K screens, for, you know, one for work, and then I loved it so much we bought one for the den.
Yeah.
And you could never go back, you know, from that. And I think with the prices on that stuff coming down, this is actually good.
It's quite affordable. Yeah. I have to tell you, the leap to, and it's only getting better and better. These displays are getting better. It's not all about the resolution. It's about, you know, the HDR and just the overall quality of these displays. The backlight, they've gotten so much better, and it's so inexpensive. I mean, Vizio, which was a cheap brand, now has a product for everybody. You could start off with the cheaper stuff, and it has great 4K stuff, or you could go to their high reference lineup, and it's very high-end equipment. So there's something for everybody, and there's a way to get in, and it's not going to cost you a lot of money, which is unbelievable at this point. It's just getting cheaper and cheaper. Let's see what happens. I'm curious about this. I'm very curious about this Xbox. Yeah, very, very interested in this. Guys, we do have a lot more to talk about, but before we do, I want to welcome a returning sponsor. Paul, remember these guys? FreshBooks. I absolutely love FreshBooks, actually. I've been using FreshBooks for, I want to say 2012 was the first time I started invoicing with FreshBooks. And these guys are getting better and better. The truth is over 10 million people have felt the same way until they discovered FreshBooks. FreshBooks is a dead simple cloud accounting software that transforms how small business owners handle their paperwork. I'm a disaster when it comes to accounting like this. I'm a disaster when it comes to invoicing, my expenses, my insights, my online payments. FreshBooks has made it so simple, and it's absolutely painless. And here's a great thing. If you go to FreshBooks.com/WTT, that's FreshBooks.com/WTT, you can sign up for your 30-day free trial. I'm telling you right now, this is the best way to invoice if you have a business and you don't ever want to deal with the headaches of following people and finding out what number, what account is what number. The new interface that they have is unbelievable, and you could give it a try. It's great, actually. They do easy invoicing. You could use FreshBooks to create and send your invoices in about 30 seconds. There's no formatting, no formulas. It's just really simple, clean, and professional. You could do a customized invoice. You could add your own logo, your own color scheme. You could do insights when you email a client your invoice. FreshBooks can show you whether they've seen it. They could show you how much they owe you, how many days. It's a very intuitive system. I know a lot of guys use PayPal for invoicing. I was guilty of that until I went over to FreshBooks, and it made everything so much more organized. There's time tracking, expenses, mobile expenses, automated late payment reminders, support, notifications. The dashboard is unbelievable. Give it a try. FreshBooks.com/WTT. Enter What the Tech in the field when I ask you, how did you hear about us? Enter What the Tech. Great people, great company, and I'd like to thank them for supporting the show. This is a great way to get your money, Paul. Great way. You know, I have actually been using them. It's not part of the read or anything, but they have been my accounting software for many years, so it's easy for me to talk about these guys. Very, very easy. Paul, what do we know about the... actually, you know what? I want to touch on this before I go into that. The Apple news from this week. What the hell happened? Did they kind of apologize?
Oh, no. They literally apologized. That's what's so beautiful.
Yeah. About it. So what happened here?
This is so strange.
Very strange, actually. I'm very, very surprised that this is a real story.
Well, it's strange on so many levels, right? I mean, it's like Apple is not a company that apologizes.
No, never.
Right? I mean, for starters.
You apologize to them. That's how it works.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. You apologize because you complained
about something. You apologize.
So, there's that. I mean, okay, fine. You know, Apple is a company that designed a smartphone that couldn't receive a cell phone signal if you held it.
And right? it blamed their stupid fat hands.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, they have a rich history of that kind of thing. Anyway, but here's what's interesting. You know, in other words, you've got this segment of your market, Apple does, the pro users, who are not feeling very happy about you right now. And there are two things on the pro side of things that have gone south for these guys. One, you released a MacBook Pro that nobody likes.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't address their needs in the slightest.
I kind of like it.
I meant pros. I mean, and I don't mean like...
I'm not a professional.
Well, I mean, I like it too. I would have no problem using this if it were a PC.
Let me tell you, it does have a lot of weird quirky things. That's absolutely true.
Let's not get off track. The point is, you will at least agree there's been a lot of negative feedback about the Mac.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
It just has, and to the tune where Apple has clearly been kind of surprised by it.
Yeah, they're definitely affected by this.
They're so used to just pontificating and have everyone slather over everything they do. I think they just didn't know how to react to it. So there's that. But the other issue is the Mac Pro, right? Which has been out for 3+ years or whatever, has never been updated. You remember, you know, Phil Schiller says, he said something crazy when they announced it. He says, you know, something like, who said we couldn't innovate, or, you know, something like that. He got really defensive, you know, because Apple every year is falling.
I feel like he almost went, he wanted to go suck it and just do this. Yeah, like it was very like, you know, like one of those.
So anyway, here we are. And I would just add to this, you know, aside from the pro market, which is only a tiny percentage of their overall market, there's also the mainstream Mac market. And there are products like the MacBook Air, the Mac Mini, the iMac that have not been updated in years either. I mean, all of them. So there's a general feeling.
But why do you think this has happened with them? You know, they were so streamlined for a while, and they really were. The thing, say what you want, but they made... The products were very streamlined. They were updated accordingly. They kind of were updated. Macs were updated when Macs were updated, and the phones were updated when the phones were updated. And now they're kind of like once in a while.
I don't cover Apple for a living. I don't really give a shit what happened to these people. I'm just saying, the way I look at it is this. Yeah. Apple is a humongous company, but they've always run like a startup. They've always been very lean and mean. And, you know, I'm sure in the Apple world, there is the same predilection toward making complaints like this. You know, all Apple does is release all these dongles. Why can't they fix the, you know, why can't they update my iMac? You know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That kind of argument is wrong, right? Because the people making the dongles or whatever have nothing to do with the iMac. And the fact that they're making dongles doesn't mean that the iMac can't happen too. So as to why these things haven't been updated, you know, specifically, I can't really say. My take on it at a broad level is Apple has seen great success with devices and much less success, although it's a very big market and a wonderfully profitable product line with the Mac. So it makes more sense for them to put a lot of their resources toward the phone, mostly, and then even to things like the iPad, because even though sales have fallen year over year for 3 straight years now, by the way, that thing still sells the Mac. So they make a very hefty profit on each one of those devices, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know. I mean, I can't, I'm not going to excuse what they do. I don't understand it myself. I think it's valid to complain it's been so long. They've always had a bad habit of not updating completely non-essential products on a very slow timeline, but it's getting kind of glacial and weird with the Mac. So I don't know. Anyway, back to the pro guys. But let's focus. So,
are you ever going to finish the story, Paul?
Yep. I'm trying, Andrew. I'm trying. Apple brought in 4 or 5 bloggers to tell their story.
Propaganda.
To apology. Yeah. To spread the propaganda. Yeah. There was one credible person in the group. Ina Fried is actually a very credible journalist. I don't know the rest of them and or can't stand the rest of them, depending on who they are. And it doesn't matter who's who. But the thing that's strange about this is, go back to Steve Jobs. Like, Steve Jobs is often hailed as some kind of a futurist. He invented all these markets, supposedly, blah, 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 whatever. Whatever you think of Steve Jobs, know this. He was kind of an old school guy, really, right?
Yeah.
And so when Steve Jobs wanted to spread the word, and he didn't want it to come directly from Apple, He would contact his buddies at Old School Media, the New York Times,
the New York Times, Wall Street
Journal, USA Today, Time, Newsweek, those kinds of organizations. It's the 21st century now. Steve Jobs is gone and whatever. And so you would think if you were going to guess, okay, and actually you'd have to be presented with it this way, because honestly, I would have guessed they still would have gone with those publications. But let's say someone said to you, hey, you're Apple and you're making decisions now and you need to make a little apology, but you want it to be massaged the right way. We're not going to go with the mainstream media, right? Who should we go with? I think what most people would have come up with is places like CNET and The Verge, you know, those kinds of publications. Yeah. Big mainstream tech blogs, right? Because they're like all tech blogs, very friendly to Apple. They would be.
They're all using Macs, yeah.
They're all using Macs.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do that. They went with some really goofy choices. And I
but why was that? You know,
that's by the way, that's the question. And I, you know, why was Goebbels the propaganda minister of the Nazi regime? Why was Baghdad Bob so entertaining during the first Iraq War? I don't know. But they went with those guys.
Yeah.
And I find this amazing because to me, like in the 21st century, what I'm saying is these people are kind of like, they're not journalists for the most part. Ina Fried is a journalist, but let's just say they're not journalists. They're almost not, they're bloggers, obviously, but they're really what they are like meme makers. Like they're just people playing off of memes, you know? And this was an example of Apple saying, look, we don't have blogs. It doesn't make sense to make an open letter maybe. Although by the way, I think they should have done that.
Yeah.
How do we get this message out? Well, let's just go with guys where we can corral and say, look, we're going to blow you away by showing you something secret. We're going to give you some details. We're not going to let you take any photos because we're going to supply all the photos. They have to be just right because we're Apple, you know. And you have to just communicate what we tell you. Will you do that? And like, who wouldn't say yes to that?
Yeah. Well, maybe that's today. Why. But maybe that's why they went with them. Maybe, you know, these were the people that agreed to not say much.
I refuse to believe that The Verge or CNET wouldn't have agreed to this.
Okay,
and they would have said,
so
this is what we agreed to.
You are a journalist. You're reputable.
I would have done it. I'm not, by the way, I want to be clear. I'm not dumping on these people for the most part. I would have done the same thing.
Okay.
The difference is I would have communicated the fact that Apple told me I couldn't write certain things and Apple told me I couldn't ask the hard questions. I couldn't ask questions about all the other stuff.
Yeah.
I couldn't, you know, look, where were all the other products that we just talked about, right? So anyway, what they basically said was, just to draw this story to a conclusion, unlike your story from last week, is that...
And nobody knows what we're talking about. That's the beauty. This is going to be the running joke. It's going to be that's the new thing, guys. Nobody, Paul and I had a very 3-hour discussion and none of us finished the story.
I know.
I'm not going to tell you what it is.
Sorry, really. But anyway, they explained why they haven't updated the Mac Pro, which is the little tissue box looking thing.
And why haven't they updated the Mac Pro?
You know, we have to use Apple's story because we don't basically what it's so baloney. It doesn't even really matter. Basically what they did was they designed themselves into a corner. I think that this thing is for desktop PCs, what the new MacBook Pro or the MacBook are for portable PCs, which is an incredible example of form over function, where if they had just gone a little bigger, a little thicker, a little whatever, it would have been the product that people wanted. Instead, what they designed was a design that they liked, that had nothing to do with the needs of the target audience. That's not how Apple tells
Paul,
the story.
And here's the thing. Okay, the Mac Pro and the Mac, it's portable. It's thin, and I get it, right? That's where the entire market is headed. Thinner, quicker, faster, better looking, better components. With a desktop, they really don't have like a box that they got to work within. You know, they could have done anything.
They used to have a beautiful tower.
It was
fully expandable. The side came off. Multiple graphic cards. I mean, they already had the design. This is something you stick under a desk that nobody looks at.
I know that it was a pro user. I know it was a pro user, and that's who they went after. But the pro user doesn't really give a crap about this thing that's a cylinder with a turbine on top. They want to know, listen, I'm investing $4,000 in this thing. It's going to cost me money. If I need to expand, can I expand? I can't? Oh, crap. Okay, you know what I'm going to do?
Yeah,
I'm just going to buy a MacBook. I'm going to buy a MacBook Pro, or I'm going to buy I'm going to buy an iMac and for half the cost and dump it out in 2 years.
Anyway, look, I find them. I have to keep qualifying this story because I want to be really clear about this. I actually think Apple does make beautiful products, right?
Absolutely,
I don't think anyone would really argue that. I think Apple mostly makes excellent products as well. I mean, I could point to any number of devices or computers and say, it's really great for what it is. That new MacBook Pro, like we've been talking about, is actually, I think it's great. I think it's fine. But I also understand why some people are freaking out about dongles and stuff. Okay, whatever. This thing met no one's needs. And it is bizarre. Like, the hubris that leads to a design decision like this is the problem I have with Apple. Because as much as I love most of their products, you know, hardware products in particular, the way they present themselves, they are not humble, even though they pretend they are. They don't give a shit about their customers, even though they pretend they do. And they don't ever pay attention to what people want, which is something they never pretend they do anyway.
Yeah.
When you're convinced that you always make the right decisions and we have the answers you don't know you need yet, that works when it works. But when it doesn't work, this kind of stuff happens. This is a huge design mistake. So, you know, sometime next year or the next year after that, we don't know. It's not going to be this year. They're going to release a new version of the Mac Pro.
Yeah, and probably new design.
Kind of a tower that's modular and you can do all that stuff.
Yeah. So essentially they're going to go back to what they initially wanted.
I think so. We don't know. We just don't.
You know what I would love? I would love sales figures on this thing. How many units they've sold.
It's single digit nothing. It's nothing. They don't think they've sold any of these things. But here's the thing. There's an interesting side story to this. Why would they do this? Like, why even bother? The reason has to be that they've come under heat first with the MacBook Pro and second with the Surface devices that Microsoft's been announcing recently, most notably the Surface Studio. These are things that hit right at the core of this Pro market that's so important to Apple, even though it's a tiny percentage of their sales. And I think the reason it is for the same reason that Surface is kind of a big deal for Microsoft. It's aspirational. It shows the outside world that these guys get it, that the most powerful users, the pro users, gravitate toward their stuff because it's so awesome. And so you may go into I don't think anyone ever went into an Apple store because of the Mac Pro, but let's just pretend that happened. You may go in there for that device, just like someone may go into a Microsoft store for Surface device. But I bet 8 or 9 times out of 10, what they walk out of there with is a much less expensive device made by some other company, in Microsoft's case, because that's what they can afford. And I think that aspirational power user thing, they're like they're the people that are influencers, right? The people that everyone looks up to. And I you don't want to lose this market. And there's a double whammy occurring where Microsoft's getting a lot of credit and Apple's getting a lot of complaints.
Yeah.
And even though this thing doesn't address the thing that was causing all those complaints, it's part of it, right? And the announcement is so crazy. It's like, we're sorry. We can't update it. We are going to actually issue a minor upgrade to this thing this week, which they did do, by the way, which is humorous. But we're never going to update this thing again after this.
Yeah.
And we're going to come up with a new design, not this year. and left unsaid is, I think there was a mention, maybe there's an iMac coming this year, but they've got this gigantic product line of stuff.
It's a lot of stuff.
And they used to have this beautiful little grid, you know. For a little while, it was 4 items, then it was 6, and now it's like 67 or something. I don't even know what it is.
Here's the thing, though. Is the right – and this is a great question for the audience. And I know most most people that watch this are Windows users, PC users. But is this a positive or a negative? Is it better for Apple – to put 16 different versions of every freaking thing that they do and to kind of be all over the place and to have everything for everybody? Or was it better when they were streamlined? They were streamlined for a reason. They became streamlined because they were forced to become like that. If they had the money and if they had the money at that time, the money like a small country would have, like they do currently, I don't think they would have streamlined it. I think they would have thrown everything against the wall and tried to sell as many products as possible. But
I actually think there's a happy middle ground that they should hit, because the only difference between Apple today and Apple in the 1990s before Steve Jobs took over is that the product names aren't as stupid. Like, they used to have this system where they had all these model names just like PC makers do today. Like, they'd have performers and you know, different. I can't.
And nobody knows what that means. Yeah.
And they, but they all had numbers. Like they're all like the, you know, N dash, you know, blah, 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 whatever. So I also think they've gone off the deep end in the other direction, right? That I think one of the benefits of Apple should be that there's less going on. Like, for example, hold on, that, go back to the top.
Okay.
See that little string of laptops right there? Get rid of the MacBook Air, would you?
Yeah.
Just get rid of it.
MacBook, like, MacBook Pro. That's it.
You either have to choose. You're going to make a bigger MacBook that replaces the MacBook Air, or you're going to call the MacBook without a touch bar the MacBook Air or something. Like you have this superfluous thing in the middle. Get rid of it. Like, just get rid of it.
Yeah.
The Mac Mini, by the way, let's stop pretending that this is a thing. Just get rid of it.
You know what, though? The Mac Mini's great. If they update it, if they did something with it.
Doesn't matter. Get rid of it. Get rid of it. There's no
$500.
No, get rid of it. You have an iMac. That's it. iMac is simple. It's a screen and a computer, and it's beautiful. They gotta streamline. You know, like this has been happening for a long time. Like they even under Steve Jobs this happened. They had way too many iPods for one period of time, right? The iPhone, I think, is in an okay place. There's two main. They sell last year's model. They sell the SE. I think that's okay. You know, the Apple Watch was the first time, especially that first gen version, where I thought, oh my god, they are going off the rails. Like the sheer combination of parts that they had to keep in the store to keep this thing going,
yeah,
to me was astonishing. The different body types and styles and sizes, and all those strap combinations, right? All of which needed to be matched to the different body sizes. So you couldn't just keep like this version of the leather strap in stock. You had to keep it in multiple sizes. Yeah,
it's a lot of inventory.
It's crazy, and it goes against the what do you call it? The supply. I'm trying to think of the right term. I'm sorry, I'm not like a retail guy, but like it goes against the very reason that that Tim Cook has a job today, which he was brought in to make this stuff efficient.
Efficient and minimize the supply chain,
Supply chain, thank you. Yeah, sorry, that's the word, the phrase I was looking for. He has completely reversed that stuff. Now, all the efficiencies he put in place, I'm sure, are still there in the back, right? But now you've got these retail stores, which are, I think, for Apple fans, tremendous experiences, right? Where they can gawk at new products while they're getting their
own. That's all it was. I mean, Paul, I was there. I was there last Tuesday, two Tuesdays ago, when my brand new Mac decided that it was no longer going to work. Just turned
did
off.
Did you ever give them the 5-star review?
I did. I did give them a 5-star consumer. Yeah, consumer. I called Consumer Reports personally.
Oh, no, they called for you. I think they just called Consumer Reports.
I told them how great they were. Actually, the experience was great, but walking around, it was exactly. It was. I'm telling you right now, all it was there was people with broken iPhones. Right? You had the broken iPhone screen. You had the people that just bought a Mac.
I've been saying this for years. That is the Apple Store experience. Yeah.
You had the people that just bought a Mac that had no idea how to use it, so they were teaching them. And the other ones were tourists that were hanging out there and just looking around and like touching everything. That's all it was.
Yeah.
I could.
By the way,
nobody was buying anything.
Well, people do buy things, obviously.
Paul, I was there an hour. I did not see, I'm telling you right now, I did not see one person leave with a Mac.
No, but people do buy things.
I know.
That's not the point. I mean, look, it's a great business.
It's a great business.
Let's get this thing back on track. Because
are you ever going to finish the story?
These guys. So I found this out after the fact, but these guys all publish these really positive about Apple stories. Like, not that these guys. Like, the import of what happened here is that this event was so un-Apple and so indicative of problems at this company. But you would never know that reading any of these accounts. The people that went to this thing, one of them started off with, good news. Good news.
It's been 2 years. It's been 2 years.
I mean, that's like going to a funeral and saying, good news, he's not in pain anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Okay. We got that going for us. I mean, I don't know what the opposite of journalism is exactly. that thing where you sell your soul. It's actually, you know, I do know what it is. It's called marketing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, it's just propaganda. You know, I just, I have a problem with that stuff. Yeah, I guess is the only thing to say. So yeah, Apple has, yeah. And by the way, I should say too, I think the thing that's interesting about this is we expect any day now that Apple's going to announce new iPad Pros, right? Talk about this for a while.
Oh, is it? This is
supposedly happening any time now.
Is it any day?
Three new models. They're going to replace the existing ones and have a new one in the middle.
Great.
On the eve of this, they've gathered some pseudo journalists to a secret lab in their, you know, James Bond villain lair and have emerged with this story that they still care about the Mac. And they used inflated numbers to make it sound like they still care about the Mac, which I also find so beautifully Apple. But whatever. The fact remains, the iPad is a bigger business than the Mac. It always has been. Well, pretty much always has been. It wasn't probably the first quarter, but and whenever they do hold this event, if they have an event or however they present it, I'm sure what you will hear is all these stories about, because it's all marketing, about how this is the device that can replace your PC. This is the device that renders your PC useless. They've been running ads lately about all that stuff, like about how, you know, it doesn't get viruses, which is the way they used to sell the Mac. It doesn't, blah, 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 whatever, all this stuff. You know, like they sell all these different things that meet different needs, but they always market everything like it's the only thing you need, you know? And so this week's messaging is the Mac is all you need. We love you guys. You're important to us. And next week or whenever they do it, it's going to be PCs are ridiculous. You should, you know, it's the post PC era. It's time to upgrade. Get an iPad.
What a crazy.
It is crazy.
I mean, the reality is that it was not a good piece of hardware. Nobody bought it and they should have fixed this a year ago. Not 2.5 years later, not 3 years later.
Yeah.
No matter how many times you say that to yourself, you gotta just get through with it.
Could you imagine? I don't care who it is. I guess you could find some pro Microsoft goons out in the world. I mean, I know they are absolutely out there, but someone surely would have been critical of Microsoft if Microsoft had ever made such an announcement like this. And actually, maybe more to the point, you know, a lot of people who were very big in the Apple world were not invited to this event. And I don't root, you know, actually, maybe I shouldn't even say this because I haven't actually gone and seen what everyone's written about this. I really just don't care. But I don't recall seeing a lot of criticism of this from those places, right? Like the Macworlds of the world, the CNETs of the world, the Verges of the world have pretty much accepted the Apple story at face value, as they always do, which is one of the big problems, I think, with that Apple side of the fence in general. Everything that Microsoft does is scrutinized very heavily, and everything that Apple does is just accepted with open arms. You know,
it's very interesting. I don't have words actually about it. I was very surprised that this piece. You know, a lot of people, not all of them. I mean, there were a lot of not all the people that did it, but the majority of them were just good news. You're right. They're going to fix it. We're getting what we want. They're going to fix it.
That thing we did 3 years ago that we never updated? Well, not this year, but someday we're going to update that thing. We're transparent. I mean, it's crazy, you know?
It's a new world.
If you go and look at they all got the same photos from Apple, right? And it's all like the high-level Apple executives. They're usually joking around and so funny on stage, and they're all like really serious. They're like, You know, they all put on their little serious face. And it's like these guys, the thing I think Mac users need to kind of understand, which is, by the way, the same thing that Windows 10 users need to understand on the PC side is these are legacy businesses, still a big audience, but this audience is contracting over time and people are doing more and more on these other devices. And I'm sorry, but like it's just not the priority that maybe it would have been for Apple and or Microsoft 5 years ago, 10 years ago, certainly 10 years ago, whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's not important in some way. It doesn't mean that things won't happen, but it does mean that it's going to take a backseat to this other stuff and always will. And it will only get worse over time. And Apple and Microsoft, to be fair here, are not going to tell you that, right? Because their job is to market these products and services. And that is a little bit of negativity that might impact that sale. But that's the truth. It's the absolute truth. It's not my opinion. I mean, this is a fact. So, you know, let's just be realistic about it. You know, I mean, you and I talk from time to time about, you know, why haven't they updated the MacBook Air in one case or whatever? And people have said to me, well, you know, they have a MacBook that kind of addresses one need. And then I guess over here on the other side, they have this MacBook Pro without a touch strip. To which I would say what I said earlier, then get rid of the MacBook Air. If you don't need it, then get rid of it.
Yeah.
If they've already made their decision.
I guess people are still buying it. I guess that's what it is. They don't need to get rid of it because people go in there and they
money. But see, that's not what Apple is all about, isn't it? That I think that's the point. I they don't need the money for one thing, right? I think we can agree to that. This hardware design is several years old. It's not like, you know, we've earned back the R&D, guys. I mean, let's, you know.
Yeah. It's not. I mean, listen, the Mac Pro is a beautiful piece. The 13-inch Mac Pro is serving the MacBook Pro. It's serving the need of that MacBook Air. The same goes with the MacBook. The same. Yeah, it's more expensive, but it's kind of in the middle. I think the goal for them is to get the MacBook to the performance level of what an Air would be, and then just sell that and just say bye bye to the Air.
Yeah, maybe that's what happens. I in the same way that you remember, this came up recently because of the MacBook Pro launch in the fall. But if you go back to 2012, was it 2012? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Apple was rumored to be coming out with what at the time was described as a 15-inch MacBook Air. I really like the MacBook Air design, like everyone did back then, and I still do, actually. And I thought, man, if they release this thing, I'm going to buy one of these. I'm going to run Windows on it, but I want a 15-inch MacBook Air. What they announced that year was the MacBook Pro Retina, right, which is a completely different class of device, super expensive, and I ended up getting a PC 15-inch Ultrabook, you know, because whatever, I can't afford $3,000. We're in the same situation right now as we were then. They have this MacBook, right? This low-end, really thin thing. They have a MacBook Pro with 13 inches. Doesn't it seem like there could be a non-Pro MacBook that's 13 inches?
Yeah.
And maybe it's what you're saying. Maybe they will release that thing. But I bet, you know, the more I think about it, I'm kind of wondering if this thing doesn't just fade away instead of be replaced, that they will sell the MacBook Airs for as long as it makes sense. Maybe, you know, education is probably a big area for that. But man, you lose so much. I mean, I have a MacBook Air, and one of the things I was looking at was like the display scaling stuff that you get. Mac OS only works if you have a Retina display. The display in this computer is, I think it's 1600 by 900. If it isn't, it's
1600 by 900. It's 1600 by, I think it's 1600 by 900.
Yeah. So the only thing you can do to scale the display is to lower the resolution. And it's like, guys, like it's so old fashioned, you know? Even that body with a higher resolution display would be fantastic. But they're not going to do that because that would eat into the 13 inch MacBook, which, by the way, starts at $1,500.
So it's very interesting. And obviously, we could talk about this forever. But I do want to talk to you about something else really quickly. Yes. Okay. You got your hands and you reviewed a couple HP products on your website now. Yeah. And I want to talk to you about this because
So I haven't fully reviewed them yet, right? So
these are first impressions.
Because I've got a stack of hardware in here right now. It's really kind of a problem. I've had a hard time completing my review of the 15-inch Spectre X360, which is a wonderful computer in many ways, but. The two that I got in the past week, in fact, that was why I was with you on Tuesday. Yes,
which we didn't talk about.
Never completed that story. Are a new version. Well, it's really a new model of the
Spectre 3, the X360, and then the other one.
The 13-inch HP Spectre X360, right? So HP released the new rev of that device last fall, but didn't offer a quad HD or a 4K screen, and it didn't have Active Pen support. And all of that was tied to the fact that this new version of the device is super thin. It's got that, you know, kind of zero bezel look, which, you know, everyone loves.
Which I love.
It enables a much smaller body, but a bigger screen, right?
Yeah.
It was a great little device. In fact, it was
beautiful.
possibly the best, you know, kind of convertible PC in the world, really. It's fantastic. But now they've got a new version where they do have the 4K screen. They do have Active Pen support. In fact, the pen comes with it now. And they also offer that kind of more professional looking color scheme. It's like a dark gray, dark ash gray with copper on the side. Oh,
it's absolutely beautiful. I mean, it's
stunning, stunningly beautiful. So, the big part of the review there is going to be around, the battery life, right? Cause obviously when you go from 1080p to 4K, there's a huge hit. And we'll see how that goes. And I think this one actually, do they have more? Actually, I'm not sure about the battery, but we'll see. So, even if it's about 2/3 of what the other machine got, it's actually going to be pretty good, but that will be in the review. And then the other device is basically a business class version of that product, which is called the EliteBook X360. So same kind of convertible design, you know, flip around screen and all that. It's the second gen EliteBook X360, but there was no first gen. So the first gen, what they used to do was sell the old Spectre X360, but with a business oriented software image load on it. Right. And some of HP's security and manageability technologies and services built in. So this is an all new design. It's pretty too. And the version I have is 1080p. Actually, there is a 4K option on this one. It's a little different from the X360, but let's just say it's basically kind of the same thing. It has actually I just showed it because it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It has a built-in pen loop. So there's a smart card reader.
Oh my God.
Because it's a business computer.
Yeah.
And it has a little, you know, some of the ports and stuff are kind of business oriented, but smart cards are important for certain enterprises, but a lot of businesses have moved forward to biometrics. So they're not using the slot. So if you're not using it, you can put the card, you can put the pen on it. And that's actually a really elegant solution to this problem because putting, you know, figuring out a place for the pen is a...
Oh, I can tell you many companies that are still using a smart card.
Yeah. So it's a beautiful little device. Like, you know, it's kind of, you know, silver, you know, it's not as awesome, you know, like cool as the X360 from the color scheme perspective, but it's, you know, very attractive and professional and all that stuff. So I will be reviewing that as well.
Very, very cool. Guys, it is time to wrap it up. Paul and I will be doing a bonus show now. If you're watching this live, stay tuned. You can watch the bonus show. If you listen to this podcast, go to patreon.com/whatthetech. You go there, sign up, and get our bonus show exclusively on Patreon. Paul, anything coming up? Coming back to New York?
Oh, that's a good question. Not in the near future. So let me look at my calendar because actually I'm home next week, but the week after that, I'm going to be on the road. It's my daughter's vacation week, and we're actually going to Montreal for the vacation, for the weekend, rather. And then we're going to be in Stowe, Vermont. And so,
cool.
Like 10 days from now, if we do the show on Tuesday, I will be in Vermont. And if we do it on Thursday, I'll be driving. I won't be able to do it Thursday. So.
Okay. So, so
it'll be kind of weird.
Next week. All right. So maybe, so not next week. Next week or not the following week? The following week. All right, so we'll figure it out. I think we're going to do more Thursdays, but if you can't do Thursday, we'll go to Tuesday.
Okay, so next week is fine. Tuesday, Thursday, whatever. I don't care. The week after that, I actually will be driving that day. So,
okay.
And I mean, when I say driving, I mean like literally 7 hours of driving, like from Stowe, Vermont to somewhere in Pennsylvania. So it's going to be kind of a – I'll drive by your house. I mean, maybe I could.
You want to drive? Where are you guys going?
No, I can't stop by. It's going to be too long of a day, but it's.
We'll figure something out. All right, we'll figure it out. All right, guys, that's it for this week. See you all later.